I make films. That way I express myself.
There's a splendid cornucopia.
That's because I am bragging.
You have any idea who I am?
Hey, what's up?
You are a 9-year-old girl.
Rub two sticks together. Make fire.
This is Adam Shartoff, and you're listening to FilmWax Radio, presented by Rooftop Films. That was the trailer for the New York Film Festival, 52nd edition. We're at the film festival. When I say we, I just mean me, but I also my comrade in arms, Herbert, who has been contributing so much to the blog. So thank you for that, Herbert. I've been interviewing a number of people at the festival, but and that's all coming up in the next couple of weeks. But this episode is really special. I have not ever met Kent Jones before. I sat down with him just the other day. And, you know, usually when you sit with a programmer, you just kind of go through the slate and you talk about the highlights and the world premieres and all that. But that just didn't happen. You know, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know if he was going to be all business or if he's laid back. I just don't have any idea. And I asked a couple of people, but, you know, they said, yeah, he's a nice guy. Don't worry about it. But as usual, I didn't walk in with a list of questions. I thought of a few. And then I decided to see where the conversation would go, and there was no problem. He's kind of soft-spoken and thoughtful, but that's good. That's what you kind of want. He was great. We could have talked for another hour easily, but we couldn't. So this is a kind of a short episode, but I did want to put it out because right now you can check out the New York Film Festival website. And if you're in New York, I think you could just go down to the Film Center, the Eleanor Brennan Monroe Film Center, and buy tickets. That was his recommendation. But you can get them online as well. But go down there because they're going to have more tickets because people, I guess, return tickets sometimes, and there's more available. If something's sold out, especially, you may want to try that or go on a standby line. I've been going to the New York Film Festival for quite a few years, and as to memory, this is, if not the best, one of the best that I have seen in many years. It's just a great slate of films, both from world masters to more focused on local New York filmmakers, with coming from that indie spirit. Some of these filmmakers have actually been even on the show. Rather than get into it here, let's just go into the conversation with Kent Jones. He is the director of the film festival. He leads up the selection committee, and we talk about all that and much more in this, my conversation with the Film Society of Lincoln Center's Kent Jones. How much time do you have so I honor your schedule a little bit? Okay, so the short two-hour version is okay with me? He looked a little stunned for a second. I don't know this guy, and I have to gauge things very quickly here.
Yeah, no, don't worry. That's good.
No, we won't take very long. Well, it's really nice to I don't think we've ever met.
No, I don't believe we have,
yeah,
actually.
Okay. I've been doing this podcast for a few years about it's a primarily conversations with people from the independent film world.
Yep.
So, and I do another podcast for Kino Lorber now.
Oh.
You look disappointed for a second.
No, I'm not disappointed at all. I love those guys.
I know, they're doing...
You know, they picked up Goodbye to Language by Godard.
I know. As a matter of fact, I was up at their office a few weeks ago, and they were all like rushing to go to a screening of it, mm-hmm. The whole staff there. And I was
the one that we did here?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And they said, do you want to come? I was like,
Of course I do, but I can't. I can't. But I said, but I know I'm going to see it. So, yeah. And I know I'm seeing it at the Walter Reed. So it was really, it was a treat.
And then we're going to give it a run after the festival.
So, it's pretty amazing. Yeah. Yeah, so that's a good place to start, actually. Mm-hmm. That is, for any Godardist fan especially, that's going to be a real treat.
It's going to be a treat. It's going to be a revelation. It's going to be a stop dead in your tracks and, you know, reconsider what you just saw from 5 minutes ago, and then something new comes up, and then that's going to blow that out of the water. And then, you know, I mean, for me, I saw it in Cannes, and I wrote about it in Film Comment, you know, about the experience of watching it. And Cannes was a little bit shortened this year because of the French election, so they clipped a day off, which meant that there were fewer screenings of some films, which meant that there was one, I guess there were two screenings of it, but really one main one. They didn't repeat it the next day, I think, and it was just packed, packed, packed. And so you saw it, right? Okay, so the moment in it when he does the incredible convergence of the two different, you know, pieces of the perspective, I just was, you know, I was sitting there watching it, and I just thought, wow, I don't even know how he did it, you know. And it got a round of applause mid-movie, you know. I think people applauded when he did it again a little bit later, but I was just seeing it again the other day when it seemed even greater to me. I was just thinking about how much his work to me, everybody's talked about it resonating with the history of cinema, but it also resonates incredibly powerfully with the history of poetry, particularly poets. You know, when I was writing about it, Emily Dickinson was on my mind, and it was just kind of like, you know, it seemed like it was very much, you know, conversant with her, but you could say the same of Stevens or, you know, a lot of, or Pound. But, you know, I think it's rare that a filmmaker actually goes into that territory, you know, because avant-garde filmmakers have entered into a poetic territory, but not, it's different. It's something else.
Does it mean that poetry fans would gravitate towards work like that?
I know one poetry fan that gravitated towards it. Now, my best friend in the world is a great poet. His name is Peter Gizzi, and there was a press screening a couple weeks ago, and I invited him down to watch it, and the two of us just sat there, and he was just
nonplussed.
Well, you know, I mean, he and I have been going to movies together for, you know, we remember going to see Every Man for Himself 30 years ago when it opened here in New York, among many, many other Godard films.
After that, the problem, of course, is everybody that does what you do, and to some degree, I guess, what I do as well, you know, when you're watching that kind of film, and again, just what happened just now with the Safdie brothers, I'm not ready to jump into another movie.
That's the great problem of film festivals.
Yeah, it is a big problem. I was funny, I ran into another critic, A.O. Scott, yesterday, but he said, you know, he was like, at least here you don't, at the New York Film Festival, you don't have to think about the movies you're missing, that are going running screening simultaneously. You know,
I mean, to a certain extent, although it has gotten
their panels potentially and other
their panels, and then also screenings. You know, at the same time that the screenings are happening in Tully, there are also revivals and retrospectives and documentaries that are happening at the Film Center and at the Walter Reed. So it has gotten bigger, but it hasn't gotten huge. I mean, to relate back to the origin of your remark, though, that's a huge problem in Cannes. I mean, you know, because that's the festival that everybody wants to get into. That's where everybody wants to show their films. And so you're there, and you're seeing one film after another. And I remember particularly seeing Three Times by Ho Xiao Shen, and after it was over, thinking, man, the last thing in the world that I want to do is talk about this movie. The next to last thing in the world that I want to do is go and walk right into another movie. And I don't know if I probably had to, but you know, whatever, it's not a major hardship. It's just it's not something that you want to do.
Yeah, and it may explain also why we need to see movies over in a fairly short, you know, period of time. And then the last footnote, I guess, you came back to the New York Film Festival. You are the director of the film festival. Is that your official title?
No, I am now.
Okay. And I guess also chair of the selection committee? Is that another?
Yeah, same thing.
Same deal. Okay. But you, when you returned last year to the society and mm-hmm. you stepped in to kind of lead the festival, let's say, mm-hmm. you started with the Godard retrospective. So,
yeah,
so,
that's right.
So it's nice that you still have this.
That was really important to me.
Yeah. I've read that. And
it was important to me personally.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's a filmmaker that I've been thinking about for the better part of my life. That I've been, you know, at different junctures trying to grapple with publicly, privately, you know, I mean, and it just, whenever I go back to his work after I haven't looked at it before, it just seems that much richer. So I was really, you know, I thought also that he would be completing Goodbye to Language last year, mm-hmm. and it would be showing it, but in fact he hadn't finished it yet. Not for a minute did it, you know, give me any hesitation. I just thought it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it would have been, I guess, a nice tidy thing, but yeah. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it would have been terrific, but yeah. It's just, you know,
and then you have something to look forward to the next
That's
festival
right.
as well.
There
right?
you go.
Yeah, and we won't draw attention to the rumors that that could be his final film because.
He's making another film. He's already started.
Perfect. So
it's
I don't know why.
Onomatopoeia.
Okay. So I don't know what people. I don't know why, but I heard well, where did I read that or heard that.
I think that,
but
because of his age. I think that because he's not in the greatest health. You know, his
yeah.
health is kind of variable.
Mm-hmm.
I think because he tends to speak publicly in a register that suggests endings of things. And he also tends to make films that often suggest endings of things. Civilization.
Language.
Ways of thinking. Well, in this one, yes, language.
Mm-hmm.
But actually in this one, I would say it's an exception. Because the Goodbye to Language is ushering in something else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's ushering in pure vision and experience through his dog. Roxy,
mm-hmm.
actually, who's kind of the star of the movie, if such a thing could be said. So, you know, I mean, really what the movie's about is it's 3D, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
so you have the two sides of the image, and then you have the couple, you know, the two sides of the couple, the two points of view coming at each other. But then that disappears at a certain point, and you're just with color, light, sound, the dog experience, you know, just people, and Godard himself, you know, suddenly appears in the latter parts of the movie with paints. It's even just thinking about it, it's a film that moves me.
It's great. See, you said before you know you're a can. This it all sort of the work that you do, I guess, it starts with can.
No,
I mean in
no.
terms of
it starts a long time before that. It starts with Berlin and Sundance, technically.
Okay.
I mean, you know, like, I'm just trying
well,
to
Well, Cannes is right in the spring.
Yeah.
So
Cannes in May.
Couldn't be.
Cannes
yeah.
in May.
What am I
late
thinking?
Spring.
Yeah.
Cannes,
yeah, Locarno.
I mean, really the way
How
that
How late
works
are you working?
That, you
Berlin,
know,
Toronto? You
well,
can't be.
We're working up through July.
Okay. That,
so
that's,
films are
that's
coming
amazing.
To, films are coming to us.
Okay.
So the selection committee goes to Cannes, and the selection committee sits down,
yeah.
and they look at films. Different people go to different festivals before then, but that's the way that it works. And a lot of films are sent to us. We ask for a lot of films. So the first film that we invited for this year's festival, we invited in like February.
Are you saying that you solicit films or you go up to people you know have
it's
films?
Both.
Okay.
You know, anything.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know a lot of people.
Right. You know who's making films.
We know who's making
committee.
Films,
yeah.
and we know who's probably going to finish. We know...
Right. And you know how to give an impetus for them to finish it, potentially,
right.
if you're making an offer, as, I guess, or...
Yeah. I mean, you know, the thing about the New York Film Festival, as opposed to Cannes, you know, in Cannes, you can say, okay, you know, get it finished for us. We really want to show it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if I'll have time. Well, that doesn't matter. You can have a work in progress. You know, I mean, that happens a lot. The film that you see in Cannes is often not quite finished. It's not the complete film. You know, even Nebraska by Alexander Payne, he took mm-hmm. a little bit out, you know, after Cannes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember Wong Kar Wai used to deliver films literally dripping wet from the lab, you know, to get them to Cannes
mm-hmm.
Back when films were still
Yeah,
wet, dripping wet. In our case, we're not a festival that has prizes. We're not a festival that has a marketplace. That doesn't really have any bearing on this. But what does have a bearing on is on the question is the fact that the festival is about choosing what we feel, and that means whatever collection of individuals happens to comprise the selection committee are the best films of the year. That's it. You know, and we have two world premiere slots. You know, we had three. I thought three was a little bit much. And so, you know, we have two world premieres opening. This year it's opening in Centerpiece. It could be opening and closing. But, you know, it made sense to have Birdman for closing, which is not a world premiere, but I'm really excited to have it. And the fact that, you know, Inherent Vice and Gone Girl world premieres is great, but and Citizen Four as well, but it's incidental to why we're showing them. We're showing them because they're great films.
But maybe that goes into the decision that, that they're the centerpiece and the opening night, right? Because they're world premieres, not the other way around, where, you know, oh, we have a world premiere, let's stick it into.
I mean, like, you know, it's exciting to have a world premiere. It's just, I was saying the other night, you know, I mean, if only I could convince David Fincher to make one movie a year, then I would have my opening night problem solved. No, but I mean, you know.
Was Social Network, remind me, Social Network was a world
premiere?
That was
opening night. That was during one of my off years.
Oh, right.
I was not here then, but I came.
Yeah. So do you care that some people refer to it as the best of the other, like, festivals? Is that something that you would like to change if that's a perception that exists that... you know,
the best of the other festivals.
In other sense, like the showcase of the best of the festivals from the year. I mean, it has that component to it, but the way you talk about the festival is very different than that, it seems.
Well, the festival has a mission. It's very simple and it's very clear. It's never deviated from that mission. It's expanded a little bit, but it's expanded only to be able to include a few more films. You know, so there's a good, healthy slate of documentaries.
Yeah.
The main slate is perhaps a little bit bigger than it was back in the days when the festival consisted only of showing films in Ellis Tully Hall. And then, you know, we're able to show more revivals. We're able to have a retrospective. You know, we're able to do a Mankiewicz retrospective.
I was interested in that. What went into that? Last year, as we said, it was Godard, and then this year it's Joseph Mankiewicz.
A couple things. One is that, you know, in a very simple way, Godard and Mankiewicz talk to each other because as retrospectives, you know, Godard was a great admirer of Mankiewicz.
Oh, I didn't
know. Particularly in his writing of The Quiet American. But, you know, he professed his admiration for Mankiewicz. You know, interestingly, I mean, in the sense that he zeroed in on what Mankiewicz was really, really great at, his intelligence, his ability to get people talking in a way that's, you know, big, expressive, epigrammatic sometimes, not often, actually, like in a film like The Barefoot Contessa. And that's... Well, I mean, look, the simple version is he's a serious artist, Mankiewicz, you know, that's all.
Yeah.
And so I think that that appealed to me. But then the other thing that appealed to me was to do a retrospective of a filmmaker who comes from Hollywood, which becomes, and when I say Hollywood, I mean, you know, what people call classic Hollywood, because really that becomes, those films become to me, and I think to a lot of other people, more and more distant in time, and as they become more and more distant in time, more and more present. In other words, more and more beautiful. Mm-hmm. Their beauty increases and their urgency increases, I think. You know, I mean, I remember a few years ago I went down to Film Forum, and I've gone to most of Bruce Goldstein's pre-code shows.
Oh, yeah.
And I went to the one that he did a couple years ago, Films from 1933, and I was just watching, I don't know, Strange Love of Molly Louvain, Union Depot, and I was just thinking to myself, I think Union Depot, maybe that's 32. Anyway, I was just thinking to myself, these films are, you know, fresher than what's playing at the multiplexes. What's playing at the multiplexes feels like an antique the minute it comes out of the light,
it feels dated.
The screen.
Right, right.
So Mankiewicz, I could say the same. You know, it's a different era. He comes later. But Letter to Three Wives to me is like, you know, just becomes more and more present as the years go by.
Seeing as many, I see obviously a lot of new movies, and in this past, I guess, summer, I just kind of reached my saturation point at a certain point, and I found myself almost getting addicted to the Turner Classic Movie Channel just because I wanted to watch some of these films, you know, and it was like a cheap fix, but it really...
Yeah, but it's not, because, I mean, in one sense, you could say it feels like a cheap fix because Turner Classic Movies promotes itself as, like, kind of a nostalgia channel, and, you know, that's what their graphics indicate, and, you know, it's like the golden age of Hollywood. Yeah, that's right. But really, what they're showing you is, you know, the most vital moment in cinema. I mean, I don't just mean Hollywood, I mean around the world, but really, first of all, cinema's young. You know, I mean, it's like when people use terms like the classical style of filmmaking, I'm like, what are you talking about? It's not even, you know, it's just a little over 100 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, it's a little early to be talking about, you know, classical style. On the other hand, it's enough time to be able to look and see what resonates and what doesn't. I find, you know, and I mean, I grew up, I was born in 1960, so there were a lot of films that excited me a lot during the 70s. Now, I there are fewer and fewer of them that I go back to, and there are more and more of them from earlier, from the 30s and the 40s, that I go back to more regularly, and the 50s, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's something that is quite different from what goes on in the multiboxes, for the most part, in the sense that there's so much concerted effort to give people very, very thin variations on what they already know and what they've already accepted. And I feel, and, you know, I'm talking about movies like Transformers, the last Transformers film that I saw, you know, the one in 3D. I just thought, you know, this is a lot of effort for, you know, to just
images that we've seen.
Well, sensations that we've had, you know, and then a sense that if you pay too much attention, and I think that this is just a matter of style and habit right now, you know, kind of, but if you pay too much attention to spatial coherence, you know, just orienting people and, you know, the actors and, it's called staging, you know, it's a very simple thing. But it's like, you know, if you pay too much attention to that, if you pay too much attention to the clarity of the story, then you're too fussy. And that takes too much time, and people don't want to be bored, and we've done our demographics, and, you know, that's the way it is, and, you know, keep it moving, and, you know, and then you get all this ridiculous media talk about, you know, it's too slow, audiences don't like subtitles, they don't like black and white, and blah, 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 you know, so and you can feel what a dead end it is when you're watching it. Conversely, you know, turn on Turner Classic Movies any given moment of the day, and I mean, you know, a couple weeks ago my girlfriend and I decided that we were going to watch The Great Lie, which is a film I'd never seen, and I just thought with Betty Davis and
you were excited.
Mary Astor, yeah.
All right.
And George Brent. And it's absolutely terrible. I mean, it's a film that makes no sense whatsoever, but
incoherent.
It really didn't matter. They were great. You know, Mary Astor, I'd gladly watch doing anything. It's a film that just, and I say it's terrible by the standards of 1942 in Warner Brothers in Hollywood, you know, which is, that's a high bar.
Mm-hmm. Where did you grow up?
Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
That's Western Mass, right?
Yeah.
Right?
It's on the border.
It's in the Berkshires.
Yeah, that's right. Capital.
From
Melville wrote Moby Dick.
Is that right? Oh, I didn't know that.
And Hawthorne lived down the street.
You just assumed they all lived on the sea. Well,
Hawthorne lived for 2 years in Lenox. And he and Melville met on an outing up Monument Mountain. Mm-hmm. Actually,
And that did that inform? I mean, is your interest in reading? Because maybe these heroes were local too. You felt sort of a
yeah.
You know,
it was an area that had a lot of
yeah.
C- connection to culture. Mm-hmm. I mean, yep. You know, when I grew up, there were 5 cinemas there. They all went under in the 80s, but, and, you know, they were showing stuff like Woman Under the Influence and Bergman, and, you know, and then the movies were mostly better, too, than, you know, I mean, in general, but, you know, and then there's Summer Theater on either end, you know, in Williamstown and in Stockbridge, and then there's Tanglewood, and so, you know, I spent a lot of my childhood at Tanglewood and, you know, seeing Leonard Bernstein, you know, and then there was the whole literary experience of the area, which is interesting because it's a very still kind of overlooked part of the state.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit less so now, but for the whole time when I was growing up, people would ask me where I was from. I would say Massachusetts, and they would say, oh, Boston? You know, I mean, they would immediately assume Boston. Boston's another world. The Berkshires is, you know, surrounded by mountains. And it's a very... the beauty of it in the winter is very austere. It's something that's always, that's on my mind a lot. And then the beauty of, and it's not a surprise that Melville tried to live there. He tried to make it as a farmer and was a miserable failure. Mm-hmm. But he, you know, he wrote Moby Dick there, he wrote Pierre there, he wrote a lot of his great work there before he just had to give it up and move back to New York and get the job in the customs office. And, you know, he and Hawthorne had this very, you know, really close, heartbreaking friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Edith Wharton, then, you know, a few decades later, did a lot of her best writing there. Ethan Frome is, you know, the hill that he went down, and the real story is the hill that I went down every day to go to school. And so it was all imbued with that stuff. Henry Adams with Summer there. Henry James spent a little time. Thoreau. You know, I mean, it's just, it's...
Yeah,
it's imbued with that, but it's very it was a great place to grow up, in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, do you get back there much? Or?
I do, not as much as I'd like,
mm-hmm.
but I go. My friend who I mentioned before lives in Holyoke, and he and I both grew up in the Berkshires, and so when I go up and I stay with him, we sometimes, you know, go and I spend some time there.
Do you have feelings about, I mean, you mentioned, for instance, that all of the theaters went under in the 80s. Do you have an optimism about the theatrical films? A lot of people are kind of now trying to, you know, rethink that and figuring the future is sort of one of the digital platforms and VOD. And you know, then there's other organizations like Tug and Gather that step in and find that, you know, we can still, eventizing is very important now. A lot of films that I see that are wonderful, more or less find their theatrical distribution is the festival circuit.
Yeah,
now,
that's right.
Right? I mean, and it might make sense, given...
I think it's at a moment right now where people just kind of have to make it up as they go along. You know, I mean, everything from distribution to exhibition to filmmaking itself.
Fundraising.
Fundraising, for sure. Everything seems very much in play, which is kind of exciting. It also feels very fragile. But art always feels fragile, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when it doesn't, that means it's a good moment. You know, I mean, everybody looks back at the 70s now as a great moment, and rightfully so, in film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's because you were not going to the movies and seeing horrible bosses or, you know, Cowboys and Aliens. You were seeing Chinatown and The Long Goodbye. You were seeing them alongside, you know, Harry and Walter Go to New York and other stuff that wasn't so good. But, you know,
but even now, those are starting to look really good.
Yeah, those look better. Harry and Walter Go to New York is finally not that bad. I mean, you know, the thing is that I felt that in the 80s, a formula was hit upon that still has not been deviated from. And that formula was more or less, you had a kind of a series of 1-2 punches. You know, everybody's, you know, the whole story of Heaven's Gate has been told many times. You know, Raging Bull was another film that was very expensive and that didn't do very well, but that was a critical, you know, success in a big way, rightfully so. And then at the same time, you know, with the memory of Star Wars and Rocky behind, and then Ghostbusters ahead, you had all the elements for something that basically you just keep seeing repeated over and over and over again.
Yeah.
You know, there are new things that have entered into the new elements that have entered into the formula, but that those films still really, they really set the template.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm neglecting the festival. Well, we're here to talk about the 52nd New York Film Festival, mm-hmm. which is running from September 26th through the 12th of October. Tickets for everything. Well, I shouldn't say that because I think there's already a lot of things sold out.
Yeah.
But there's still plenty of tickets available, plenty of the slate, I assume.
Yeah.
At least, yeah. You know, certain.
Yeah, I would encourage people to actually go to the box office. And go to the box office day of, because a lot of the time you'll find that people have returned tickets who have bought blocks of tickets. I think that that's generally a good policy.
Is like everybody from New York City and from Manhattan? I mean, are there signs that when you show me films like what we just saw, the press and industry screening for the Safdie film,
What.
Heaven Knows What, thank you, and you know, you have a film also like Listen Up, Philip, mm-hmm. by Alex Ross Perry. You know, obviously. It seems like there's some attempt to look at more films from younger filmmakers, too. I don't know if that's the right. But they're coming. It's not so much that they're younger. It's just that they're coming from a different a path, I guess you could say, in the American film for the New York Film Festival.
It's not an effort to try to show films by people who are younger. It's an effort. But it's an effort to show good films,
right, you know,
the movies
yeah.
that we like. And it's amazing that there are so many younger filmmakers. There are Josh and Benny Safdie, Alex Ross Perry, Matias Pinheiro, who's an Argentinian filmmaker, made one of three Argentinian films in the main slate this year. And they're all very different, made by filmmakers from different generations.
Mm-hmm.
Those are movies that are, and Whiplash, you know, I mean, those are movies that are. Yeah. You know, made with really youthful energy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Mia Hansen loves movie too, Eden. It's just broke my heart.
Most of her films do.
Yeah. This one is very, very special. It's about her brother.
Oh, right, yeah. He's from the like one of the sort of pioneers
one
of the deep
pioneers
French
of garage music France. Sven Hansen Love. And Daft Punk kind of make a cameo appearance in it. But it's a movie that it's like it floats,
mm-hmm.
you know. And it's interesting because Denis Lenoir shot it. Denis is one of the great cameramen working today. And he also shot Cold Water by Olivier Assayas, who's mm-hmm. Mia's partner in life.
Right.
20
and who
years
has
ago.
A film in the and who has again a film in the
Olivier's
festival.
Film, Claude de Sils Maria, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 20 years later. It's been 20 years since Cold Water. And that was when Olivier and I met for the first time, because we corresponded a little bit. It brings back a lot of memories. And I think that youthful energy is something that, you know, is really exciting. Then on the other hand, there's the New York component.
Right.
The Safdie brothers and Oren Moverman's movie Time Out of Mind with Richard Gere
mm-hmm.
share, you know, they're both street movies, you could say.
Yeah.
One of them is about junkies. The other one is about a man who slowly dawns on him that he's homeless.
yeah.
That's the thing that I think is
maybe that's what I'm
one of the great things about that movie, because it's not a movie about a guy who's homeless.
Okay.
It's a movie about someone, to me, it's a movie about someone realizing, coming to terms with the fact that he's homeless. So it's an action.
Yeah. Lizzie kind of battling denial.
Well, he wakes up in a bathtub, you know, and people are like, okay, you got to get out of here. And he's just kind of like, oh, no, I'll be okay. And they say, yeah, you got to get out of here. You know, it's the voice of Steve Buscemi. But it's a film that's made, you know, Josh and Benny were talking about how they made their film with long lenses so that they could shoot on the street and, you know, steal shots when they could and mix actors and non-actors and get real street life. Oren made his film in exactly the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that the first shot in the movie the first day of shooting, I think they stole a shot, you know, because Richard, when you see him in the movie, certainly doesn't look like, you know,
the Richard Gere we're familiar with.
Yeah, from a fashion shoot. I mean, you know, he's genuinely hardened.
Mm-hmm.
And he just stood there on the street, you know, with a skull cap and
begging for money,
and you know, people didn't know it was him.
That's shocking. You know, it's like it doesn't feel like a bit either. You know, and it's like it just there's something where it's like I gotta shake my career up a little bit. I have to, you know, you're doing like a lot of movies. Most of them are very entertaining, but
I think it's a story that Richard was moved to do.
Okay,
personally. And something that he wanted to do for a while.
Yeah.
And he and Oren converged and they got the tone right.
You know, it's really refreshing talking to you because I take a question that was a little bit kind of not very comfortable asking, which is like, are you going for trying to get younger people to come in? And I even know as it's coming out of my mouth, really that's not what I'm interested in asking because I feel like you're going for a quality and it's like you're just in a type of emotional story in a film, and you're just opening it up to other types of filmmakers to be part of that.
If I were to start thinking about bringing in younger audiences and thinking about, you know, whether or not we had enough movies from Poland and whether there were enough movies from this part of the world or that part of the world,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, then I'd be going down the wrong road.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the simplicity of the mission is such that we're just five people, you know, me, Gavin Smith, Dennis Lim, Marion Missoni, Amy Tobin, watching a lot of movies, talking about them, deciding whether or not to invite them. That's it. You know, I mean,
the
themes and the semblances.
We've got five films from this country, we've got four films about a married couple breaking up or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
Right? That's kind of very secondary or tertiary.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of,
yeah. I mean, you know, and the poetic word would be assonances, you know, mm-hmm. between certain themes and, you know, between certain films. It's just not. It's something that comes afterwards, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Birdman and Cause of Sils Maria. Birdman's about a middle-aged actor who wants to, you know, and Cause of Sils Maria is about a middle-aged actress. There are three films from Argentina, but you know that there just happen to be three films from Argentina. We have films that look to kind of address issues of police negligence. In the black community, and I'm talking about Marty's movie about New York Review of Books, which has a long section with Joan Didion based on her Central Park Jogger essay.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also talking about Nick Broomfield's amazing documentary, Tales of the Grim Sleeper. And then Arthur Jaffa's movie, Dreams Are Colder Than Death, is just a very straightforward examination of the question. You know, he's posing the question to people, what is it like to be black in America today?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, those three things obviously converge. And then against the background of what's happening in Ferguson, you know.
Yeah, but these films are obviously being already discussed before these events happen. I'm
assuming. But that's the thing that's great about, you know, having a clear mission and then having it occur year by year. It has to be re-realized once a year,
mm-hmm.
picking the films for the festival. So you're always going to get a different, you know, organism.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
What are you going to do in a couple of weeks when this ends? Do you have a break or something, or do you go right into?
I'm actually making a film. I'm making a documentary about Hitchcock and Truffaut based on their tapes, the tapes of their conversations.
So
I've shot
book?
A lot of interviews. Yeah.
The Right.
Well, the book, but the...
Which the tapes, were transcribed from tapes?
Yes, they mm-hmm. were transcribed from tapes. Mm-hmm. So there's 27 hours of them talking. So it's a film comprised of interviews with filmmakers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's... most of the interviews are done. We're in the editing room. It's a film about filmmaking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's also a film about Hitchcock.
You can market it as a love affair.
Yeah. More alive.
These guys in cinema, I'm thinking.
Yeah. But it's also great to have a kind of a cross-generational conversation, you know, between Hitchcock and Truffaut, and then Fincher and Olivier Assayas.
Oh, can't wait to see it.
Yeah, no. It's
when do you suppose that'll be?
We're moving along, so next year.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Yeah.
I know you had a writing credit on Jimmy P. But have you directed anything or?
I've made documentaries.
Okay.
Marty and I co-directed a movie about Ilya Kazan, and we co-directed another small film about 10 years ago. I made a film about Val Lewton that he produced and narrated. There's a film, a fiction film that I'll be making.
So you're not going to get into new directors.
No, I'm not going to get into new directors.
Thanks so much, Kent. Really nice meeting you. And
nice to meet. It's good to be focusing on things other than, you know, world premieres.
Just talking about your world premieres.
That's what a lot of interviews are.
Oh, yeah. Great. I'll see you around the festival.
Yeah, great.
All right. Thanks. Okay. This is somewhat important, right? The New York Film Festival is taking place between September the 26th, which is a Friday, I believe, through October the 12th. And it will take place in three different locations on the Lincoln Center campus: Alice Tully Hall, the Eleanor Bunnen Monroe Film Center, and the Walter Reed Theater. As we talked about a little bit in that conversation, there's different sections to the festival. There's the main slate, which are just basically a bunch of new movies, the best of the best, special events, screenings, anniversary screenings, reunions, that kind of thing. Spotlight on documentary. This is a relatively new series where there is going to be quite a few documentaries being shown, including the Martin Scorsese document that Kent was referring to, called The 50-Year Argument. The new Joshua Oppenheimer documentary. It's the follow-up to The Act of Killing. And also Lucia Small and Ed Pincus's film, One Cut, One Life. And I just had a conversation with Lucia, which I'm going to post in a few days. Also, I should mention, I guess, Seymour in Introduction, which is the first documentary made by Ethan Hawke. It may be the first film made by Ethan Hawke. So there's tons and tons to see there. There's a retrospective, as we discussed, for Joseph Mankiewicz's career. And then there's the experimental parts called... the projection section and convergence, which I think is a more interactive part of the festival, and more. So there you go. Go check it all out. New York Film Festival, still the blue chip festival here in New York that I look forward to so much every year. Thank you so much, and we'll be back again in a couple of days with some more New York Film Festival footage, some lingering Toronto Film Festival footage, and of course all new interviews with filmmakers and journalists and programmers and other industry types. Thank you for listening. This is your host of FilmWax Radio, Adam Shartoff. You've been listening to episode number 240, and I thank the folks at Rooftop Films for helping present my podcast week after week, month after month, as they do. Thank you so much. Until next time.